meeting, let me know. Thank you. All right. Calling a Clean Water Commission meeting for May 4th, 2022 to order. Starting with roll call. Brendan Addis, present. Matt Jones.
Present.
Michelle Gertz, I understand, is going to be late. I assume she hasn't logged in yet, but so she would be here later. Okay. Roger.
I'm here.
Jeff.
Present.
Marie.
Present.
You said Sandra is still out, but planning to attend later?
Yes, she said she'd be probably a little bit late.
Okay. Josh?
I'm Dan.
Saw him in the roll call. Just don't hear him yet. I know sometimes there's connectivity issues. You said you saw him logged in, though.
Yeah, he's logged in.
Okay. And Bob.
Present.
Thank you. All right. First order of business, approve the March 30th, 2022 special meeting notes. If folks had time to look over those, thank you, Alice, for sending that ahead of time. Any comments from anybody? Not seeing any of the motions to approve.
So moved.
Any second?
Second.
All those in favor? All right. Any opposed? I'm not hearing any.
Unanimous.
Unanimous. Yes. Thank you very much. Do we have any public attendance or public comments that we should know about, Alice?
No. The deadline was at noon today, and I checked, and then I also checked again. Oh, we do have, well, I checked at noon, and there were no public comments or requests, but and I checked again at a little after 5, but we do have a Mr. Connor in the audience attending via video, but we'll see how much he actually has to say.
Let the record show. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I know the next order of business was the Stream Health report. I don't know if, as we're still trying to work out the technical issues, if she's still off, if you want me to skip
It
to
looks
the
like she
manager's
just
report.
got on.
I think she might have just made it in. Yep.
Okay.
Hi, sorry guys for the technical difficulties on my end.
You're just in time. Good to see you, Marley and Jeff both. Thank you guys for joining this evening. So yeah, we'll just continue with the agenda as is, and if you're ready for giving the Stream Health Report presentation.
While Marley's getting that kind of queued up there, maybe Justin, should I go ahead and do a little quick intro?
Sure.
Kind of like we did. So we just got to speak with the county council about the Stream Health Report on April 20th. So that was kind of the culmination of a lengthy process to go through about a decade's worth of data and information to try to update our Stream Health Report. It's a countywide Stream Health Report that we last time produced back in 2010. So we're very excited to have been able to put another one of these together. Marley Milosevic is, for those who haven't met her, she's one of our senior level scientists within Clean Water in the Monitoring and Assessment Group. Marley has been the lead on this project, but we have had a great deal of work go into this and help on this from the rest of our monitoring group. There's 4 folks in that group, including Marley, who have done a lot of the monitoring that took place to make this possible, as well as all the behind-the-scenes data analysis. We also had a lot of work from a lot of help from Eric Lambert, who you all know very well, in our education outreach arm, to help put the whole package together, as well as some help from the GIS department, working on these cool maps and interfaces that you'll see from Marley tonight. So we are looking forward to getting any kind of input that you might have on this. going forward, and I will get out of the way and let Marley talk.
Thanks, Jeff. Can everybody see my screen? Is it showing the Clark County Health report?
Yes.
Okay, great. Again, sorry for my technical difficulties. Hopefully that won't be happening during this presentation. So as Jeff said, I'm Marley Milosevic. I'm a natural resource specialist with Clean Water. And I think I'll show the beginning of the Stream Health Report. This is kind of Eric's part. Unfortunately, he's not here, but I'll try to do my best for him. I don't know if, so we've had this section of our Stream Health Report has been up on online. So we kind of added in our data at the end of this. So the health report goes into different factors that have to do with stream health, which would be water quality, which are the chemical and physical properties of water, biological health, which is how well streams support living creatures, and then stream flow. And so how the story map works is there's little chapters that you can scroll to, and I'm just going to click through the different sections that we briefly go over. So there's what are healthy streams, cool, clean water, riparian native plants, plenty of dissolved oxygen, diversity of native living creatures, steady and gradual changing flows, just a whole bunch of different factors go into making a healthy stream. Then our next piece of the story map would be threats to stream health, and that includes stormwater. That's our big thing. Obviously, we deal with stormwater. So sediment, nutrients from fertilizer, chemicals from pesticides, bacteria, oil, litter, bad things in stormwater. But our section, we monitor for water quality, and we do different physical and chemical parameters, water, dissolved oxygen, pH, turbidity, nutrients, bacteria. We use meters, and we take hand grab samples as well. And then for the biological health, we collect bug samples, which include caddisflies and mayflies, stoneflies. Those are the three really good ones. You want those in your creek. And here's a picture of me collecting our bug samples, which includes scrubbing rocks. And that's our little net that we set up in the creek, and it collects the bugs as the water flows down the stream. And then here is our big new part to the health report. Hopefully the map will load here. So this these maps are based off of our stream health assessment project, which includes 51 stream sites. Of those 51 stream sites, we have 9 that are considered our long-term index sites. And we visit each of those sites every year, every month. So we have a long period of time where we have sampled those creeks and have a lot of data on them. The other sites of the 51, we visit on a 5-year rotating panel. There's just so many sites, we can't get to all of them every year, but every 5 years, we will visit that site for the full year. And when I say year, it's a water year from October to September. And so this map shows data from our 2010 health report. That's when we last did a stream health report. So it's been a long time, and we're happy to be doing this again. So showing from 2010 to 2020, and how this part of the stream map, this part of the story map works is you can scroll down on the sidebar where we have the legend, which explains how what's on the map, which we have 3 colors to denote the health of the stream, which is good, fair, or poor, green, yellow, or red. And then that what's on the map right now is overall stream health, which includes the BIVI, which is the benthic index of biologic integrity index. So it says, what good bugs are the score for your bugs in the stream. And you want, you know, it's 100, 0 to 100, 100 is good. And then we also have the Oregon Water Quality Index, which is index of a lot of our like temperature goes into it, pH, a lot of the parameters go into that as well. And you can scroll down the side of the story map to get more information on the Oregon Water Quality Index as well as the BIVI, and more information on our project as well. So let's take a look at the map. I'm gonna hopefully scroll in enough to where we can see it. And starting with the slider bar, so on the left side of the map is the 2010 data. And once you, if you drag the bar over to the left, you're then going to see the right side data for 2020. And you can see a few of the watersheds change over time. Either it be green and yellow, more up in the north and north county. And then I'm going to use Cougar Creek as our example site because you can select a site that you want to see. We're going to zoom into Cougar Creek. And if you click on the dot, you can then see all of the data that we have for that site. So for Cougar Creek, it is one of our long-term index sites that we sample every year, every month. And you can see that back in 2010, the OWQI was 45, which is considered poor, as well as the BIVI and the overall stream health. In 2020, it was 53, so it did come up a little bit. In 2020, we don't have BIVI data. Thanks to COVID, we weren't able to sample that year. But this, I think 2021, we did sample, so we'll have more data coming in. And so this stream, unfortunately, Cougar Creek is poor. However, something good about Cougar Creek is that we have a lot of projects right now, the Clean Water Division going on in Cougar Creek. We have the Heritage Farm Headwater Wetland Restoration Project. We have stormwater retrofits as well as new stormwater projects going on Highway 99 and Hazeldale in general. And then we also have had the Canines for Clean Water Behavioral Change pet waste cleanup or pickup on that Cougar Creek Trail. So we're doing a lot in our program to try and increase these numbers. We want these numbers to go up. All hope is not lost yet for Cougar Creek. Before I go on to the next map, are there any questions about this map?
Marley, this is Jeff Kesnick. Just a quick question on the numbers. When I see numbers going up and down, kind of bouncing around, do you have a feel for, when I look at this, how much of a change in the numbers you would consider to be significant?
Yes, so that is actually going to be our next map, which is our trends map. And so I can show you, we've run a significant statistical analysis to show if it's significantly trending one way or the other. We have those on our long-term index sites because we have enough data, a long enough period of historical data. And we're hoping that once we have enough of those five-year rotations, we'll be able to do trends on those sites as well. But for now, we're starting out with our 9 sites. I'd be happy to show you guys next.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Are there any more questions for this one, or I will scroll on? Okay, I'm going to scroll on. I'll take questions at the end as well, too. So our next map as I was talking about, is our stream health trends map. And again, we have the sidebar here for the legend. An upward arrow is going to be showing that the site is trending better for water quality. We have the approximate symbol that it's going to be the same, that the water quality is the same. And then we have a trending worse, which would be denoted by an arrow down, facing downwards. And then we've also colorized the map with the current status. So for the OWQI and BIBI, you're going to see the green, yellow, red again for good, fair, poor. And then we also did trends on the turbidity and bacteria as well. And those are going to be showing what the state standard threshold. So if it's meeting the state standard or not meeting the state standard for green and red. And then again, on the sidebar, we have more information about the OWQI, BIBI, bacteria, turbidity, and then our project as well. And then we also have a mini sidebar, which gives a little bit more in-depth detail. But let's go and look at the, let's look at the OWQI first. That one's a little more in-depth for information. I'm going to close that. And can everybody see the map? I think so. We were talking about Cougar Creek and, I can't click that off. The arrow was facing upwards. So water quality is actually trending better for Cougar Creek. So as you saw that the numbers were kind of bouncing around, we found a significant trend that for the OWQI, which is a conglomeration of which has a components to the OWQI, which unfortunately I cannot scroll to see. Let me refresh my webpage real quick. For some reason, I can't see the components.
Yeah, we're not seeing the arrow there either, Marley. It looks like
it's having some. It's doing kind of a weird thing right now. Let me see if.
Late in the day, it's probably tired.
Yeah.
Like the rest of us.
Okay. Well, so you guys can see the arrows now. So before I do the pop-up, because the pop-up might just not be working right now. I had this problem before we presented to council, but during council it worked. But you see Cougar, Curtin are both trending upwards, Matney is trending downwards, and the rest are all staying the same. Now let's see, clicking. Yeah, it's still not working. I wonder why that's happening. It's also not letting me close it either. Well, unfortunately, we can't see it right now, so we'll probably have to talk with GIS about fixing that. I know GIS is doing some maintenance things around this time, maybe in the next week, maybe currently. But you can actually scroll down in this pop-up and see which component of the OWQI is trending better, trending worse, what is bringing that score down or up. I know for this site, the phosphorus is trending down, I believe, but inorganic nitrogen is trending upwards. So meaning when I say trending upwards for inorganic nitrogen, that means that there is less inorganic nitrogen in the water, which is good. You don't want a lot of nutrients because that can feed bacteria growth and bad things in the water column. But unfortunately, I can't show you guys. So sorry. But maybe we can try looking at a different map. Nope, see, that's not going to go away.
What if you picked a different chapter and came back to it?
Good idea. Let me try that. Try BIBI. We'll click on Cougar Creek. So the symbol does work here on the BIBI, but there aren't as many. We didn't run trends on each individual part of the BIBI, just the BIBI as a whole. But you can see for BIBI, it's staying the same. Water quality staying the same at Cougar Creek. It's still not going away. Do I dare go back to OWQI? No. Okay, well, unfortunately, that's not. But we can look at them as a whole. So let's go back. We can look at bacteria next. And for overall, Cougar Creek, our example, it's staying the same for bacteria, and it isn't meeting the state standard for bacteria shown in red. Most of the creeks are staying about the same bacteria-wise besides Rock Creek and Mill Creek. And then I will show our last one, turbidity, which all are about staying the same for turbidity, except for Curtain Creek, which is trending down. Are there any questions for this map? I'm really sorry you guys couldn't see the OWQI extra little guys, but.
What water quality parameters go into OWQI?
I'm going to scroll up so I don't forget one. So we've got it on our list right here. It's temperature, dissolved oxygen, pH, total solids, inorganic nitrogen, total phosphorus, and bacteria.
Where do you get your phosphorus test?
We send all of our tests to ALS in Kelso.
Okay. Okay.
Are there any more questions for this map before I move on to the parameters map?
You're going to talk about the invertebrates that you find?
For the BIBI, there are different types of invertebrates that we find, like the mayflies, the caddisflies. Those are good, but we also find a lot of like worms. There's a lot of what they call tolerant taxas, which show poor water quality. So they're things, that salmon don't like to eat.
That I've seen them used as an index of water quality.
Yeah, that's this BIBI right here. That's the benthic index of biologic integrity. And all of the different bugs that are found when we sample, and that's a one time a year sample that we do in the summertime. There's different scores within that index, such as clinger status. That's a type of bug. If there's a lot of clinger, then that means there's fast water. And then, predators. If there's predator type bugs, then that means they have food to eat. And then that's a higher level, a better indicator of water quality.
I believe there's 10, right, Marley? There's 10 sub-indices that go into the overall BIBI that gives us that picture. We like that indicator, Roger, because it's they call it kind of an integrated indicator, and it's a long-term indicator because the bugs have to sit in the stream all the time. It's got a lot of power to describe the health of the stream even more so than water quality parameters sometimes, because those are kind of a grab at a particular instance, right? Whereas yep. the bugs are there all the time, and whatever's happening all through the year impacts them. So we like that one a lot.
Have you done any correlation between urban agriculture, rural, taking a look at the environment of the stream with the water quality?
Well, there's a fair amount of that out there, and we have done bits and pieces of that in the past. This particular report does not incorporate the land use aspect. It's more of a picture of what we have rather than a causality thing. But that does go into some of our other decision making and some of the state's work on these types of data sets. So, yeah. Sorry, Marley. Go for it.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
Are there any more questions before I move on to our parameters, Matt, that I can answer? I'll move on. Maybe this one will bring up more questions as well. So this map kind of goes into more, is more in depth on our actual water quality parameters that we sample, that include state standards. So we use these to, compared to the Washington State standards, which will be on the map as green and red. So green will be met and then red is not met. A lot of these standards are kind of if you exceed one time, once a month, then you don't pass for the whole year. So the only one that's not that stringent, well, is bacteria, but it's got a different, it is stringent, but it's based off of the geometric mean and then also the 90th percentile. So we'll take a look at those. Again, on the story map, scrolling down, we have more information on the side about each of our water quality parameters that we're looking at, which are turbidity, temperature, dissolved zinc, dissolved copper, dissolved oxygen, and bacteria. I'm going to just touch on a few of them because I don't know how much time I have left. But also on this this middle sidebar here, or middle, I guess middle bar, it's not a sidebar. There's more information about each parameter describing how important it is to water quality and how it's calculated. So pulling up the map, this is our bacteria. And as I said, it is on the geometric mean 90th percentile. You have to pass both of them. If you don't, you fail. And I'm going to pull up my Cougar Creek example. Let me make this bigger. Maybe not. Since it's kind of acting different than the last time I tried using it. So 2010. I'm sorry?
Oh, it's probably because you're sharing.
Could be. Back in 2010, the geometric mean and 90th percentile both did not meet standard. So overall, it's not met. And then scrolling down to 2020. It's also not met. So not great at Cougar Creek for bacteria. Pop-ups are just not really working well today.
Doesn't love you.
Okay, let me refresh that. So at least we can see the map. Get rid of the pop-up. Okay, well, that was bacteria. Anyways, you can get a quick idea of the colors across the county where we have lower bacteria, and then red would be high bacteria. So let me show another one. Temperature, which is a little more in-depth, which I'm really hoping the pop-up will work. We'll see. But this is one of those standards where if you exceed even one time, figure out. So I'm going to select, of course, I select Salmon Creek by accident. I'm going to try and go do Cougar Creek, because Cougar Creek is interesting. Cougar Creek is actually one of our cooler streams in the county. There we go. The threshold for temperature is 60.8 degrees Fahrenheit. So if it goes above 60.8 degrees Fahrenheit, even once in the seven, so it's called the 7-day average, daily average. It takes 7 days, and we collect this temperature data every 15 minutes or every 30 minutes in the stream from during the summertime. Cause that's when it's most important for salmon. All of these state standards are in one of the most stringent categories. Our streams are considered core salmonid habitat. And so we have these more stringent thresholds, such as the 60.8 degrees Fahrenheit. And if you look at Cougar Creek, you can see it's almost, in 2011, it's 61 degrees. We're almost there, 0.2 degrees different, but it doesn't meet because it's not close enough. But that's why a lot of what we do in clean water is so important, with like the restoration in the headwaters and the infrastructure projects that we put in place to try and get these waters to meet standards. We're so close, there's hope, but it's still not great right now.
Is there a correlation between riparian vegetation and temperature and the basic water quality?
Right. Yes. Riparian habitat is very important for temperature. And that's something that the Heritage Farm Restoration Project will help with, because we're planting in the wetland and trying to get water to go into the groundwater where it stays cooler and isn't affected by sunlight as much. Mm-hmm. Are there any more questions for this map?
Marley, can you zoom out again? At least from what I was looking at, we only had like maybe two sub areas there that were in the good category. Am I seeing that correctly?
Yeah. Yep. Only up in North County.
Those, I know some of those areas, particularly on that northeast side, I'm thinking that those are fairly vegetated already as it is with those already being above the standard level, are there kind of areas that you've targeted for improvement, or is it seem to be some other effect? I mean, the urban areas on the southwest side makes sense, but just kind of wondering what your analysis is more on the east side.
That is an excellent question. On the east side, like I said, looking into, it could be that there was one really hot day and it didn't meet standard. This is showing 2020 data on the map. Which I know we didn't have our heat wave, what was last year. But sometimes we have a heat wave that just blows it out. It's too hot. For that, I mean, we really do need to, reforest all over the county if we're going to, and I know for the East Fork, the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership has targeted places on the East Fork for this type of temperature work. And I know Jeff can talk a little bit more about that if he wants to.
Yeah, we can, or we can kind of keep going and talk a little bit more afterwards. But in general, though, Brendan, yeah, we're as you know, we're working with the Conservation District and others up in the East Fork watershed, and there's a dual TMDL up there, one for bacteria, one for temperature. So there is a lot of known temperature problems in the East Fork, as this group is aware. So we're kind of, you know, when we take these data sets, we're combining them with some of the work that ecology has done in the past and that is being looked at by folks like the Estuary Partnership. And all this kind of goes into prioritizing areas where either under the grant programs or other people bringing in monies to do planting projects, Clark County doing planting projects in the Lower East Fork. So we have the ability to use some of these data to drive decision making for our capital programs and some of our outreach, some of our work that we do with our partners. So we can talk much more in depth of those kind of things, but I think that's where you're heading with it, is how do we kind of parlay this into action, and those are some of the ways we try to. So
yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah, for the last part of this map, we actually have a query table that's been built, where you can select whichever site you'd like. I'm going to select Cougar Creek because that's our example site. And you can see all of the data, so you don't have to go through each map on its own if you want to see all of the data together for that site. And you can select which year you'd like to look at. If I want to look at 2020 for Cougar Creek, I can see all of the bacteria data right here. And this is kind of needs a little more polishing, where we need to change like the parameter names. But as it is now, you can see right away, where it's where it's meeting standard or where it's not meeting standard. So for the, temperature, there's multiple temperature factors. I just told you guys about the 7-day average, but there's also other levels for lethality that Cougar Creek does meet. So it's not all bad. but you can see turbidity, there was one time it didn't meet turbidity, so it didn't meet the state standard. But as I'm saying, there's 12 chances in the month, so it only didn't meet it one time. It could have been a really crazy stormy day, and it didn't meet turbidity standard. But that's kind of what we have so far for our Stream Health Report. I'm really excited about all these new ways to look at the data for the public. And get to share it with you guys. So if there are any more questions.
I got one. Okay. You take somebody that lives in a watershed, you know, like Lacamas watershed,
mm-hmm.
and we have a problem of the Lacamas Creek as it comes into the lake. I mean, most of the year it was about 25°C and that's far too hot, and it parlays into water quality problems in Lacamas Lake, and Lacamas Lake is in Camas, it's not in the county. How do we get coordination between the county and the individual cities as these watersheds hook together? Or is that a dumb question?
No, that's a great question. There's a lot of collaboration, and I'll let Jeff talk about some of our collaboration.
Yeah, you want me to take a shot at that, Marley?
Yes, I will.
I don't see Justin in my strip here either, but Justin, feel free to jump in as well. But that's exactly it. It is collaboration. There are pieces of our county permit management, our stormwater permit compliance that really require us to coordinate with the other municipalities, the phase two permittees, the state when they're working on total maximum daily load or water cleanup plan work. So we are an active partner in those kinds of things. As you know, Roger, we've worked with the county, working with the city to help with some of the work that they're getting done on the lakes by their consultant team and some of the community groups. So those, I mean, really that's what it comes down to, is just finding those opportunities to to cooperate on grants and cooperate on these implementation teams as a stakeholder. In the Lacamas example, you're right, most of the watershed is outside of city jurisdiction, but we do have our phase one stormwater permit requirements there. Under that, there is a, you know, an extra requirement for first treatment for all new developments that go into the Lacamas watershed. That's been the case since the, you know, the late 80s or early 90s. I might be wrong. Maybe the late 90s. You know, so things like that where we know these problems exist, there are, you know, multiple mechanisms to try to start chipping away at those problems. I don't know if I'm getting quite at your question, Roger, but hopefully that helps a little bit.
Well, and Ecology's TMDL work should drag everybody into the same, yep, same cooperative space outside of all of that.
Yeah. I'd actually, because of some of the things that, that we've started on Lacamas, would love to get in the middle of all of your macroinvertebrate data and take a look at it, because we'd like to take a look at the streams that go into the in the watershed and take a look at them on a monthly basis and actually do inventories and do water quality with it. And we've set up all of the process and getting the gear to do it. And I really need a little bit of coordination and a little bit of fuss to get that thing going. And would love some independent tutelage, if you will.
Yeah, the county right now, our group is currently in the middle of our, as Marley was talking about, we do the rotating sites, right? So it just so happens that, unless I'm mistaken, this is the Lacamas year. And so we are currently out there taking monthly samples at 7 or 8 locations on the tributaries, all through the watershed. We will be putting out our temperature loggers within about the next month or so, a month and a half, early June. And then we'll be taking our own bug samples at those 9 locations in August or so. So we will be also kind of active out there. Certainly worth, you know, some conversation to coordinate and if there's some guidance or advice we can give, that we'd certainly do that.
It'd be lovely.
Any other questions from the group?
Marley, is Jeff Kessink again. I'm just looking at this with the parameter page. Is there another level of detail we could drill down to get that monthly data you were talking about, or is this as detailed as we're able to see?
Right now, this is as detailed as you're able to see on the story map.
Yeah, your example of turbidity, I'm just wondering, you know, if the red on there is... Was it truly 1 month or was it several months? And
no, so for in 2020, this would show 1 month in the water year 2020.
Okay.
So if you wanted to see a different year, looking at Cougar Creek turbidity, it was 4 times going back to 2018.
Okay, so that's the monthly count of times it failed.
Yes, yes.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
We've tried to make this just something I probably should have said way up at the beginning on the intro. The hope is that we're putting out there something that connects with a variety of levels of interest, right? So the person who wants to just kind of take a really quick stab at it and see the basic blocks of colors or the overall stream health based on the BIBI and the OWQ can do that, and then walk through to the trends, and then to the most detail being the drill downs for some of the pop-up maps on the parameter map. So this is one of the areas where, you know, some additional thoughts from you all. One of the nice things about this particular platform is it is constantly updatable. We don't have to wait another decade to put another piece of data out here. So we are hoping to make this a more iterative and a little bit more like a shorter time step when, as we get new data for these rotating years, we hope to be adding things. So it's a little bit more of a living document rather than a one-shot deal that only happens every number of years. So we're looking forward to that. The other thing I'll mention as far as navigating the site, something that Eric is working on is putting together a little video that'll pop up when the public comes in and uses this that gives a little bit more of a walkthrough on how to navigate the maps and how to make the thing work to your advantage. So we're looking forward to that. We should have that, but by the time we go live to the public, which currently is scheduled for the 18th of May. So we're hoping this will be live for public to look at. Obviously, there's a few bugs left. We're not quite sure why it works sometimes and doesn't, but the geniuses in GIS, I have no doubt, will be able to make this work seamlessly all the time. So appreciate your patience while it wasn't letting us do quite everything today, but I think it's going to be a really powerful tool for folks to look at. So,
Jeff, have you looked at variability? Have you looked at the correlation between different weather parameters in different years and what you get in streams? Just like last year, we didn't have cyanobacteria until the very end of the season. The year before, we had it all through the season. And this kind of correlation of weather factors and what the response in the streams and the response in the lakes is something that is near and dear to my heart. I don't know if everybody else is thinking of that.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge factor, right? You can, one of the reasons that we like to see longer term studies like this is because you can start to see those patterns and those trends past all of that annual variation, right? So, certainly on a month to month basis, you see a lot of that, and that can have a dramatic impact on the kind of scores that we're getting. Like Marley was saying, one thing can kind of knock us over that threshold for the year for a particular parameter, and then you're out of compliance with the state standards, for instance, right? We haven't done correlations on all of these. One of the ones that we do tend to do correlations, I don't say not correlations in the sense of a statistical correlation, but we will break down some of our data sets when we're looking at them for implementation purposes. Things like bacteria, right? We'll break that down into wet season and dry season samples. Some of the standards even have kind of a difference between wet and dry season factors. And so it can help, and it can help with figuring out what the sources might be for some of these issues, particularly when it comes to things like bacteria. If we see high bacteria levels during the summer dry season as opposed to during the winter wet season, that points us in certain directions that we can look for the causality there. Is it coming from septic systems? Is it coming from livestock? Is it coming from something else, right? Definitely it doesn't necessarily show up in this particular analysis, but that is definitely one of those things that we look at when we're trying to interpret our data going through the year. Does that help?
Yeah.
Is there a plan to include information here so that when citizens look at this, they might know what possible sources are for different turbidities, or not turbidities, different parameters. So we've got zinc acute and chronic here that are amiss, copper acute and chronic, turbidity, so those could be due to roads, etc. So is there information in here about where those could be coming from so people can understand how their behaviors might be impacting water quality?
Yeah, we do have information when you click on. So, yeah, if we click on zinc here, this middle sidebar talks about dissolved zinc and how it gets into stream. So both from natural processes such as weathering and erosion and then anthropogenic sources. Zinc comes off of, you know, galvanized metals that attach to soil particles. So yeah, there is information in this middle. It's the middle bar. It goes into more in-depth information about the parameter, and then also how it relates to the state standard, how the state standard is actually calculated.
Great, thanks.
Well, I know myself, I could come up with a lot of questions I would want to ask you guys, but for the sake of time and the rest of the agenda, I was gonna wrap it up for us this evening here. I do want to say I've been on the fly, I fly on the wall for different conversations that I'm thinking back over a decade now that have referred to this concept, and it's really cool and beautiful seeing what you guys have put together. So, thank you, for all of your hard work, and this looks really great. It's neat to see it come together.
It's pretty amazing. It really is.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me share it with you guys.
It's even better when it's behaving.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I'm happy to hear it behave for council for you.
They are. I think I saw an email about, you know, these systems undergoing some updates. I'm wondering if that has something to do with it. Just unfortunate timing here, but.
Yeah, definitely encourage all of you to, you know, take a deeper look when it's out and running good. And if there's questions or if you're looking to, you know, dive deeper into any of these data, definitely get in touch with us. We're excited about it, and that's what it's there for, is to use. So.
Yeah, on that note, Jeff, is there one or both of you that we want to bother your inbox with questions if there's more?
Why don't you send one to both me and Marley?
Very well.
Perfect.
Thank you both. I would imagine you guys might like to get on with your evening, unless you're eager to hear the rest of the meeting tonight.
Marla, would you let us know how we can get hold of you?
Yeah,
Alice can
provide, right? Yep.
Yes. I'll send that out later tonight or tomorrow.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Thank you, Alice. Mm-hmm. Well, with that, I'll thank you guys again and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Good to see you, everybody.
All right. Justin, manager's report. What do you have for us?
I don't have as much as usual, actually. Steamrolling towards handing the wastewater treatment plant over so that I can get back into other things. We are well underway on that. There's just some final things that have to get coordinated before the whole operation can finally turn over to Clark Regional. That has to happen by July 1st with financial closeout going past that, but we're hoping that certain aspects of it can happen by June 1st and I can largely get my hands out of the place. Stop getting in the way out there on Wednesdays. Other than that, I mean, we're focused on budgeting. We're really kind of hoping we could push through some project positions to start really figuring out, you know, if the staffing analysis that we've sort of been doing is, you know, kind of fully going to meet our expectations. We're sort of eyeballing some 2-year positions that, essentially we can kind of use some surplus funds that we've accumulated over the last couple of years during the pandemic, where it's been frankly difficult to spend our entire budget. It's going to give us a chance to sort of pilot these new positions that we think we're going to need over the next couple of years. You know, setting aside the fact that certain people are going to retire and that's going to be a massive loss for the division in a lot of ways. So we're trying to be prepared for stuff like that. And that's really kind of where my head is during my first budget season with the county. So. Yeah, there's been some other stuff popping up that's, you know, we have stormwater facility transfer process that essentially when certain developments were built, the decision was made by the engineer and developer team to make stormwater facilities privately owned by the HOA, maintained by the HOA. Years down the line, every once in a while, and this doesn't happen too often, those HOAs, you know, Carrie and Rich will visit them. They talk to you about their process, and they'll ask about handing over control of those facilities, giving the reins to the county on them. And we have a process for handling those situations. It just needs to be, call it refined. And we're kind of working on that among, you know, other policy and procedure items that with county reorganization or public works reorganization recently has turned into a department wide focus. So, that's just one that rises to the top of my mind. Because there have been some cases recently where HOAs have approached us and asked if that's a possibility. So it's certainly an interesting process, but.
Without getting too deep into the details of that, Justin, I'm just curious if taking over management of a facility requires the HOA relinquishing it, or if the county can say, in particular cases, we're taking this one.
Pretty much requires the HOA to approach us. We don't proactively go and take ownership of the facilities. Carrie and Rich, like I said, I mean, they talked a bit about their process, but to keep it brief, I mean, they go around and they tell owners, you know, what the expectations are as far as maintaining these things, what the requirements are really. And they provide that technical guidance that's necessary for those owners to do that. If an HOA does ask about it, then it's quite the process to get through. I mean, we won't just take the facility and fix it for them. It actually has to be brought up to current standards before we'll take it. So it still actually requires Carrie and Rich to, you know, do the initial visit and the inspection and then follow up with them and make sure that it gets maintained properly before we take ownership.
Any other questions for Justin? All right. Well, thank you for the update, Justin. Wishing you luck with cleaning your hands of the waste treatment facility. No pun intended.
Yeah, it's been a process, but we're getting there.
Good luck with that. Allison, staff liaison report.
Yes. And just to make sure everybody knows, Eric, I had a conversation with him earlier this afternoon, evening, and he is not feeling well and is out. And so, and he didn't have anything he wanted to have for his education outreach report. So, that's there. And, so far, Josh was, he had messaged me. He is here, obviously. And, his system just had some connectivity when you were doing roll. So he's been here this whole time. And I, haven't seen yet, Michelle or, Sandra get on yet. Just to do a little housekeeping really quick. So just a reminder, we will be giving the presentation for the annual report to council on Wednesday the 18th at 9 a.m. Be giving out. Should be getting an email probably next week or so from the council's Rebecca Messenger will most likely be sending them out for the invite for the WebEx. And I will probably reach out to Brendan, to you, either tomorrow or first part of next week to just go over the slides and make sure we're on track, because I have to get those in the following Monday.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Up and through to everybody. So that's going on. And then for the bylaws update, there's quite a bit there. And actually, the bylaws, when I was reading through it, actually says that they need to be, this is the year it's actually supposed to be reviewed and potentially updated. So I don't know if you'd like me to just go through and work on it and then present to you, or if there is a group that would like to have a special work group for it, committee for it, or one or two people work with me. So I wanted just to run that by you quickly to see if anybody had any ideas or preferences.
I don't want to speak for others, but I think the idea of one or two people helping you out with it is a good proposal, and then bring a draft before the group.
I agree with Brendan. That's a lot of work for you just to take on. You might as well have some help.
Volunteers?
So I will volunteer to work with you.
Anybody else? Going. It's so much fun. Okay. Thank you, Marie. I appreciate it. And I will also make sure everybody else has information about it. And then just a couple little miscellaneous updates. As you know, there's a lot of turnover right now still going on in public works, in key positions and in divisions. We're in the process right now of developing a new on and offboarding programs in place, so that it will hopefully make the process a whole lot easier. As of last Wednesday, we have our new acting county engineer, Brian Vincent. And I think the rumor was that he's very, very well qualified. What was he? I think he was Multnomah's county engineer. So he has a lot of experience. So we're really excited to have him on board with that. Our Sabra, Hall Nelson, our longtime, office admin assistant, just retired on Monday, and we are going to miss her greatly. She is kind of the heart of the department, makes sure that everything runs really, really well. So we're working on that to try to get those very big shoes filled. And I know that we're requesting a temporary position to help with the summer monitoring group, because there is so much to do that they're just, it's just incredible the amount of work that they have to do. So they're working on that, and I'm going to be helping some of the clean water infrastructure group on some of their project management for a couple of smaller stormwater facility retrofits. And there are not any plans right now to open up the front desk on a full-time basis up on the fourth floor for public works. So I know we're going to be getting a video doorbell installed like they have on the second floor and out at operations. So if anybody has a personal, have an in-person appointment, you'll ring the bell or pick up the phone, and somebody will answer, and they'll let you in or come let you in. That whole process is still getting worked out, but that was something that was let us know about today. As you know, the Stream Health Report just went to council. I know that they are very interested in having your opinion and finding out if you have any suggestions. So please do feel free to reach out to Marley and Jeff, Justin, or even to me, let us know, so that, and if you for some reason don't have their information, feel free to give it to me and I'll send it to them, so that we can make sure that we have any information. So if you think of something tonight or this week and you go like, oh, well, this would be really great if they did this, please let us know, because that's some of the feedback that you as representatives of the people of Clark County, we really rely on you for that. The county is starting to do some hybrid meetings. There are some people who are meeting in person, and there are some who are also doing in with video. And so right now, but I know a lot of people who are getting sick. So from what we're Justin and I had talked about this. And right now we're going to see how things are going and how it's trending. Potentially we could get together in July or maybe in September. We'll just kind of see how things are going and how the county is, what the recommendations are from the public health and the county. But there is some hybrid thing going there. So that may be a potential where we'll be able to meet again. That'll be up on the sixth floor if we get to have that opportunity. We've been doing a lot of work on policies and procedures and a lot of just as Public Works as a whole, but then we're also doing a lot of operational, how to make things more efficient even in our department as well. So there's been a lot of background work and getting ready for, especially for our division, for the whole summer is really big. I'm going to be helping Rod with his Mill 2 report that he's working on, that I know he talked a little bit about at the last special meeting. So there's a lot going on. And my goal is, I think it was Marie or Michelle had asked to have Eric come in and demonstrate his other story map. And so we're going to have, I've asked him to come in, and I believe he's going to be in September. So we'll have him available to run through his story map at that time and lend up a few other people for in October as well, starting to work on that. So I think that is all I've got. And feel free if you want to send things, if you go on trainings or things like that and you want to send them early, that'd be great, because I have a folder and I just take them and I start putting them in, and I'm starting to try and put the document together as well for the next, for the 2021-2022 annual report. So feel free to, if you have anything coming through, let me know. And that's all I've got for right now.
Thank you, Alice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Roger?
Yeah, are you taking a look at potential field trips for this summer, or is this going to wait a year?
I think hopefully, and actually that was one of the other things we had a conversation about. We're still trying, we're going to try to do something in the fall. If we can make it happen and with safety, because like still right now, the safety protocols are such that we're not allowed to have two people in the same in a car together. So, and making sure we're still having to be, distance and some things like that, even outside. So, hopefully September, October, we'll be able to have something again. I guess that would be a good conversation question to ask. If we are able to do it, would you, still like to try and do the east side? I know that was, what we had initially thought about doing last May 2020, or if we have something else in line.
I'd love to see the east side done.
Okay. So I think we
would be more than happy to help in that. I mean, Lord knows I've done enough field trips in my life. We do that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Roger. I appreciate it. And so definitely if we can have that, I knew there was one other thing with the whole hybrid. We get an opportunity. That's what we're going to do is, I know last one time we had it mid-October, it was like 15th, 16th or something like that. And we lucked out and the weather was just glorious. So I'm hoping that, you know, we'll have an Indian summer then too, as well. It'll be a, you know, a really beautiful time.
We've always had nice weather.
Yes. Knock on wood. And that's all.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it. I was going to open it up for the working group updates with outreach, followed by partnership. I need to step away really quick. Optimistically, I'll be back before it goes to partnerships here, but follow through. If I take a little bit longer, I'll be right back.
Well, the outreach, we haven't done anything in April. So I have some time off this month. Hopefully we can move forward with our document that we've been working on as far as the training and the packet.
This is Josh. I'll go ahead and do research. Bob Trost and Brendan and I met and discussed putting together a scoping document for what kind of research projects we're interested in. So we had that meeting, and then based on the notes and the brainstorming, we put together a kind of draft document and discussed it a bit, made some comments. So we'll be meeting again, hopefully in May, to finish that up and then get started on researching the particular areas we want more information about. Some of those might be about, you know, as simple as asking for clarification or more information on part of the county's operations or responsibilities. Another might, you know, be looking for, you know, scientific research and information, either studies that have already been done or data that's been collected that could be analyzed to see not just what are the water quality issues we're dealing with, but what are the sources and what are we facing with climate change and an increasing population and ever-increasing development that puts both demands for use on water resources, but also puts stress on water quality for surface and groundwater. That's all I've got for research.
Josh, what day did you guys meet?
Oh, shoot. You know, I don't remember. Bob, do you recall what day that was?
I don't remember. I'd have to look back. We'll fill you in on that.
It was okay. April 4th. April 4th.
There you go. We filled you in on it. Bob promises and Brendan delivers.
There you go. Well, that's one of those things where, you know, that's one of the things we put in the report is every time the groups meet, even if it's a phone meeting.
Yeah, and I'm sorry I jumped in here a little bit late to that conversation. I don't know if Josh already mentioned this, but at least I'll add to it that, you know, the intention being of having a research group that's also looking at situations and kind of going on record of just making the presentation of the question, you know, serving that function as a commission that, you know, as a group of concerned citizens that says, hey, what's being done about the following? Is there any conversation about X, Y, or Z? And then if I can add to, I see the creek naming is on the agenda here. Update for that. I'm forgetting where I had updated the group from the last time in the conversation, but where we're at now, set another meeting for some, pardon?
You haven't done anything since first part of March.
Okay. Well, I have another meeting set with some of the members that we had gathered together in the first meeting where we had gotten some other partners involved. So there'll be a group meeting on May 18th, which will be in the afternoon. So I know we got our presentation with the commission that morning, that afternoon. There'll be a group meeting. One of the gentlemen with the Chinese American Society in Portland had kind of connected us in contact with a lady who helps with research projects and also working with some of the youth groups for doing these summertime research projects. And a lot of what they're really looking at is trying to just tell the narrative of what the history is of those sites on China Ditch and Shanghai Creek and just getting more of that history and making that presentable, you know, as part of our community's history. I was also forwarded a really great publication about the Chinese diaspora from the Oregon Historical Society. So I had a copy of that that I've been reading through. I will say the thing that was probably really great about starting it was I was a little bit humbled to recognize that, well, I had originally thought that a lot of the people that came to that first meeting were just kind of concerned and interested citizens. There were many individuals that attended that are active researchers and leaders in the community. And so we got a really great group coming together for that, and optimistically should have a good little history story that's able to come out of that. I know we keep titling this part of the project, you know, the creek naming, and I think that may be something that comes about in the end, but the objective right now is just to do some research and be able to tell the story. So we're looking forward to some more news about that. But yeah, the short version is we are going to try to coordinate some research groups and work with some kind of youth research teams for a summertime project. It'll probably go into the fall, and hopefully more to report at that time.
Can I jump in here for half a second?
Yeah, please.
In Spokane, the Mullen Road has a big, long story, but the Mullen Road has markers all along it that actually tell the story of what happened. Because Mullen Road goes from the Columbia all the way up over into Montana. But the heads of navigation. And it has those markers. And if you think about that kind of process, and you got the China Ditch, you got Shanghai Ditch, you have all of the work that was done at the turn of the century and before the turn of the century by those essentially immigrants, people who were brought in to do that work, and all the things that went on with it. And you tell that story in a series of monuments and a series of print material that can be disseminated. Maybe you don't want to change the names of the creeks or the ditches, but maybe telling the story of how they were doing is a much more valuable process.
I think you're spot on, Roger, with what the consensus was from our first meeting. You know, when I first called the meeting, it really was just kind of like, oh, these names were given in jest. Let's look at doing a little history and come up with something that sounds, you know, easier to digest for us. But the consensus was really what you're talking about was perhaps, but really what's important is that we find this history and that we tell it. And there was proposals of, just as you're mentioning, some interpretive sites landmarked there, working with the community, getting that story out. And as you mentioned, you know, if the name changes, then perhaps, but that with the name combined with the story, there's remembrance and there's also a heavier impact about the realities of what that history was versus, you know, just kind of whitewashing it by changing the name and then you can kind of forget that history. And so I think that's exactly where a bit of the consensus was with the group on it. So we kind of shifted the focus away from fixation on the name and really just looking more at like, let's do an interpretation of this and present that history to the community.
Parks does own
some. I really wonder what the Wing Luke Museum in Seattle has on it and the Washington Historical Society has, because both of those two bodies have done a lot of work on this and collected a lot of documentation.
What was the first group you mentioned?
The Wing Luke Museum in Seattle.
There was somebody at that first meeting that was either associated with it or was going to connect with, but I don't know if that has happened.
I think it's Dale Hom. Yeah. He's a member up in Seattle, and so I think I might be correct on that. So, yeah.
Parks does own some property around the creek there, kind of towards the south end of it. I think on both sides, the west and the east. And I have brought this whole effort up to Rocky, so he is at least aware that it's going on, and it may come back around to him at some point.
This the whole process could be very easily grant funded as well. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, something that is put in place and the whole process. That's an easy grant funding process.
Duly noted. That's a good point. As our meetings require special rules, if we have more than three of us in attendance, I've been kind of doing this with Michelle and Matt right now. Pardon, four
yeah,
or
so
more.
It's five or more. So. Yeah.
Okay. But I'll continue to keep folks updated. And if anybody's interested by in more, you know, let me know, see how I can cycle through that. I'm just trying to pay attention and not scheduling something that requires more legwork on Alice's part.
Thank you.
And that's all I have on that.
I have something kind of a little off topic, not water, but in the Sunday Columbian, they've been doing a little more history of the area, and they've had, it seems like they're touching more on the immigration and the native population, not just the white settlers that were donated the land claim. So it is kind of nice to be able to read about people that you never really heard about before.
That's a good avenue, perhaps I'll look at maybe reaching out to them and see if they want to do something on it too as we get more together.
Oh yeah, because that's the lady from the Historic Society.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's one thing too, just for everybody else's sake on this, you know, the part that I'm reading from the Oregon Historical Society, and I think a big part of this narrative is the fact that often the way we're taught or our mind kind of thinks of our history of the settlement of the West out here is Native American population and then Europeans come in. And then in the mix, you have these other ethnicities that always kind of show up as these other immigrants. And the real history of the settlement of the West in particular was, you know, people of European descent coming over from the Eastern states, but Chinese immigrants at the same time, and both of them building and developing this area. So it's not kind of, you know, like, oh, white settled area and then Chinese immigrants on top. It was the two together at the same time, but the history kind of erases that Chinese part and makes it a little bit of an afterthought. And so that's a lot of what I've noticed the Historical Society is trying to tell in that narrative that of different stories that I was reading from around Oregon in particular.
I was talking to a friend of mine that works at the Evergreen School District, and she said, hey, Roger, there's 23 different ethnicities and that live here in around Vancouver. And they've been around for a long, long time and they have very positive communities. And they are, Evergreen handles them quite well. Other districts don't do so well, but that is something that really is a very vibrant force in this community.
Mm-hmm.
Really is.
Well, it is a good segue to item six here. We get the unfinished business of the environmental justice and connecting diversity, equity, and inclusion into the CWC mission. And I was thinking about this earlier when Allison, you were mentioning revisiting the bylaws. And there's been talk of trying to include something of a statement, you know, within our bylaws that kind of addresses, you know, a commitment to that. And so I think it'd be worth noting when we're revisiting that draft to put that in there. I know I will say one thing that came up when we were talking about this originally was trying to expand upon our kind of hiring practices or recruitment practices really, for this body as well. And taking a little more strategic look about how to be more inclusive in our community when we're reaching out to folks. I think saving the details of that conversation perhaps is an agenda item for a future meeting, but I know that's something that I think would be a good focus of ours. Does anybody have any other thoughts on that particular topic that we can think about, you know, kind of including as meeting items or strategies for the future? If anything does come up, bring it to the table.
Did partnerships go?
No, we skipped over that.
Oh, my apologies. I thought that
okay,
I thought that happened while I was out of the room.
That's right. I was hoping Michelle would pop in, but she hasn't. We did have a chance to meet on April 11th, and we've finally agreed on an evening per month that we can get together on Zoom. We've gone over all the information we collected earlier in the year. We believe we've got some new partnerships we would like to propose, and we're currently working on the wording for that, and we are hoping to be able to present something at the July meeting. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unless I've forgotten anything, we're down to new business and general discussions, if anybody has anything they'd like to bring to the table. All right.
Jeff had something.
No.
Yes, you did. The water presentation on May 7th?
Oh, the email I got today.
Yes.
Yeah, I got a late
email. I can't access it right now.
I've got to bring it up and take a look at it. I don't remember who that was from. Hold on, Alice.
No worries. If not, you're sent.
I figured you could probably forward it on to everybody. Well, here it is. Clark County Historical Museum. I just thought it was interesting. They have a, I think it's a monthly speaker series, but it's really late notice, but tomorrow, May 5th at 7:00, they have Jim Pastillo. I don't know the gentleman. But he's doing a talk on from water wagons to private development, kind of the history of clean water in the county. Hmm. I thought kind of, you know, fit our group pretty well. It's being held, it's at 7:00. The doors open at 6:00. They said very limited seating. It's being held at the historic Covington House on Main Street.
Are they broadcasting it virtually or only in person?
Only in person is my understanding. And it is free to the public.
Could they record it?
I don't know.
Very interesting topic. I will not be able to attend, unfortunately.
I wonder if we can get him to talk to our group.
Okay. I'll ask.
I'm going to try to attend myself. I'll raise that question to him.
Then you can tell Alice whether or not it's a good presentation.
Yeah, whether it's worth our time or not.
On second thought.
You're going to audit it first.
I'd be happy to.
Great. Well, unless anybody has anything else, I'm going to try to get out and catch the last of the light before it's gone.
So the question on that, I couldn't get my mute button to unmute because my screen is too small. For the story map, that's not to the public, but can I share it with some coworkers?
I'm not sure. Actually, that's an Eric question at the moment, and he's not here. But I think we can get back to you on that. We can touch bases with him tomorrow if he's back to work.
He did the health monitoring story map.
Eric has been really a huge part of setting up all the GIS maps and coordinating with GIS to get that working. So Marley really knows the underlying data, and she was also a huge part of, you know, putting that format together and making sure that it looks nice. But Eric,
okay.
Eric really tackled GIS stuff, and he is kind of, I'm not going to call him the access gatekeeper, but, you know.
Okay.
I would say probably hold off just because I know GIS was doing a lot of updates, and I think that's why we are having some broken links right now. And so I would really hold off until probably closer to the week of the 18th.
Okay.
And if it gets done sooner, then we can definitely let you know and, like, say, yes, send it out.
We wanted it out to the public earlier. The reason it actually got pushed to May 18th was the GIS updates.
Okay. Let us know when it's cool, please.
Absolutely.
It's very good. And it will be very interesting to take the health of the creeks and see if we could put a septic layer over it, just kind of see what our issues are for our funding program that we're getting now with the septic eliminations.
Maybe a cow layer, too.
Cow.
You should put GPS trackers on all the cows and have it live. Like those snowplow maps they have.
And the dogs, right?
Like that.
Pet licenses. Okay.
Alrighty, well, I will formally adjourn the meeting then. Alice, thank you as always. Thank you, everybody else.
Thank you.
Good night. Have a good evening. We'll see you soon.
Good night.